The first case this morning is U.S. v. Martinez, and we have Ms. Bertrand.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Amy Moffitt, and I'm a third-year law student at the University of Chicago, licensed under Supreme Court Rule 711. I represent the appellant, Mr. Jorge Cardenas. Today I will be addressing the trial proof issues, and Ms. Bertrand will be addressing the sentencing issues. The most critical issue arising under the trial was the issue centering around the concept of the weight of marijuana involved in the conspiracy. The government chose to charge Martinez and Cardenas with crimes that contained weight as an element and then failed to prove that essential element of weight at trial beyond a reasonable doubt. The weight could not have been proven because it was physically impossible for the amount of marijuana found in the house to have come from the Federal Express van. So weight is an element of the crime, and the...
Let me ask you this, please. Is it, do you think, at least possible that the bundles in the house were in the van, but not in a crate, and therefore could be very quickly unloaded?
No. Every other bundle was part of a crate. The crates were loaded. They were, you know, locked and closed together so that it took multiple people to open each crate. It seems unlikely that they would have had 70 bales of marijuana loose in the back of the van as well. And the government alleges in the, you know, in the indictment and the acts they put forward and in their brief that all of this marijuana came from the van itself, that it all had to come off the van, and that just simply isn't possible. It's not possible in the time period of 15 minutes.
The jury believed it, didn't they?
Excuse me?
The jury believed that it did, didn't they?
Well, I don't think that the government put forth any sort of proof that that it came off the van. They just said, here's the entirety of the weight of marijuana, and they didn't
have an option. Was marijuana in the residence as well as a garage, right?
Yes, but that marijuana in the house could not have come from the van.
Was that an argument that was made to the jury? In other words, was it argued to the jury that the bundles in the house were unrelated to the delivery?
No, but I believe that the sufficiency claim was preserved by the Rule 29 motion, but no one specifically said anything about the differing amounts of weight. With the marijuana in the house being separate from the van and it being physically impossible to come from the van, I don't think that any rational trier of fact could have indeed found that the marijuana in its entirety...
I know it was physically impossible.
Well, there was no empty crate in the van. There was no time for 84 bales of marijuana to have made it from the van to the house. There was no place for that marijuana to go.
Judge Rovner's posit, right?
Unless you assume that the marijuana was loose in the back of the Federal Express van, I just think that that's not possible. I mean, considering the way that the rest of the marijuana was packaged and handled, it seems very unlikely that there would have been 70 bales of loose marijuana, with each bale weighing, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 pounds. In order for the marijuana to have come from the crates, to have come from the van, in a span time of 15 minutes, it's just not possible.
A line of men, you know, strong men, terrified at being caught, working like little marijuana beavers, are, in other words, you know, in unison, they can unload a lot in a short time, can't they?
I see that I've entered my rebuttal time, but let me just say that line ended in the garage. It did not go into the house, so it's unlikely that that marijuana would have made it at all from the garage into the house. Thank you,
counsel. Now, Ms. Bertrand.
Your Honor, I'm going to pick up where Ms. Moffitt left off and discuss the intersection of the proof at trial with the sentencing issues. And I would note that many federal practitioners throughout the country are waiting for the Supreme Court's ruling in Rita. And given the issues presented in the parties' briefs, one possibility may be to pen this issue while we await that. I know the court has declined to do that in some other cases, but we're coming so close to the end of the Supreme Court's term. It is likely any day now we could see an opinion. In fact, this morning we were checking online to see if one had been issued, and as of 9:15, we had nothing. But, Your Honors, here we do have a case where even had the government proceeded on a broader conspiracy, had not charged Wade as an element of the crime in the indictment and pursued it, triggering mandatory minimums at sentencing, here the sentencing tail is still wagging the dog, and this has been an ongoing concern when considering the burden of proof to exercise at sentencing. Here, first, I would maintain, as Ms. Moffitt started discussing, that the proof of the weight was unsound because of the way the marijuana was being transferred into the house. You also have testimony from one of the government's witnesses that he saw marijuana in the house before the van arrived. And here, it would have made a difference. Averaging the weight over the bales.
Was that a defense witness that said that?
Oh, it was a government witness, I believe. And, Your Honor, it's at 179, 180 in the transcript. Here, the weight would have been different. We would have gotten well below 1,000 kilograms had they just focused on the weight in the garage and at sentencing. And again, even at sentencing, had the government come in and said, tag on the weight in the house, it's reasonably foreseeable that these co-conspirators knew about the weight in the house, they were involved in this conspiracy, I would maintain that you get into the same type of difficulty that we're seeing consistently. We saw it pre-Booker, and now we're seeing it after Booker, about bootstrapping conduct that was not charged in the indictment. What was charged in the indictment was the transporting of this marijuana in a van, and that was the government's theory of the case at trial. And now saying, well, as an afterthought, add the marijuana in the house, too. This is the ongoing discomfort that members of this court have had, that members of the Supreme Court have had, about the way we sentence under the guidelines, that we come in low and then we sentence high. And what the defendants maintain in their pleadings is that it's unconstitutional. And while this court, I think, has tried valiantly to keep the guidelines and their structure, their security, and the two generations of lawyers and judges that have been using the guidelines as an important element in sentencing, without a higher burden of proof, even I believe it was Judge Posner in one matter stated, when you have the tail wagging the dog, perhaps you should at least be looking at a clear and convincing burden of proof. You see this not only with the weight, but also with Mr. Cardenas's leader organizer enhancer that was almost an afterthought. The PSR writer didn't include it, and then the government filed an objection and said, no, include this, bump him up. I think the court gave him 3 levels.
Well, of course, the government has argued that Mr. Cardenas had an ownership stake in the marijuana, that he was the person following the van, that he was the person who instructed Pelo Guzman
yes.
And I think maybe Torres to leave the parking lot and to proceed to the house. Now, are those disputed facts? Are they disputed facts?
Yes, I believe they are disputed facts. And as Judge, you just noted, the government has alleged this. There were not specific interrogatories presented to a jury. This was a court-found determination under a preponderance burden. And I would suggest that, particularly after Cunningham, you see the Supreme Court again emphasizing that's inappropriate. It's not workable constitutionally. And if the court doesn't have any more questions for me at this time, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Burton.
Thank you.
Ms. Ridgway?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Cynthia Ridgway. I'm an Assistant United States Attorney from the Southern District of Indiana representing the government in this case. To first address the time frame with regard to the argument by Mr. Cardenas that it was impossible to unload the bales of marijuana from the truck. When we look at the time frame brought forth by the evidence, the testimony of these co-conspirators, along with corroborating evidence from law enforcement, we see that approximately 4:45, between 4:45 and 4:55, these individuals left the residence at Gateway Drive. Gateway Drive was located directly across the street from Target. It took them however long it would take an individual to drive from Gateway Drive across the street to Target. That was at approximately 4:45 to 4:55. Testimony then stated that the individuals met at Target for about 5 minutes. After that, they drove back to the Gateway Drive residence. Law enforcement did not see exactly when those individuals arrived at the Gateway residence. They did not see exactly when those individuals began, as this court has pointed out, the assembly line removal of the marijuana bales from the truck, the back of the vehicle. But what they did see is a few minutes later, possibly 10, 15 minutes later, they observed that truck open with the individuals already in the process of unloading those marijuana bales from the truck into not only the garage, but also the living room.
Now, could the marijuana in the house, it was Gutierrez, I think, who testified that he had seen marijuana in the house. Could that marijuana physically have come from the van based on the crates in the garage? In other words, what I'm trying to get at is this. Could those bundles have fit in the partially emptied crates?
Yes, Your Honor. The evidence revealed through photographic evidence as well as direct evidence testimony that there was one large crate that encompassed the entire diameter of the back of that van. That crate had already began to be unloaded. There were also then several smaller crates behind that larger crate. And the testimony was, including Mr. Gutierrez, that the evidence, the marijuana, came from the van. Mr. Martinez and Mr. Cardenas are mistaken when they indicate to this court that Mr. Gutierrez testified that there was marijuana in the house before they got there. That is incorrect. I would ask the court to look to the exact site, page 178 and 180, that Mr. Martinez and Mr. Gutierrez cite to the court, and what you will find is that the question posed to Mr. Gutierrez was, did you see marijuana being unloaded from the van? And the answer is yes, because some was in the living room. It is that statement and that statement alone that they rely on in their argument that there was marijuana in the living room before the individuals arrived with the crates of marijuana from the van. There is no evidence to support any other evidence other than what the co-conspirators testified to clearly, which was that all the marijuana was packaged in Texas. It was all driven then across the states to Indiana. It was then unloaded in the back of the van into the garage in an assembly line fashion, some in the garage and some right inside the door inside the living room. To address what I believe was the second argument.
Let me ask you, yes, I think it's fairly clear, but to make sure. The living room opens into the garage.
Correct, Your Honors. And that established footpath was even known to the defendants. More evidence that they knew exactly where they were putting the marijuana. As the police arrived at the scene, that's where they shot off to, right into the living room and then out the other door of the residence. With regard to the manager or supervisor role, Your Honors, the evidence was clear that Mr. Cardenas was at least a manager or supervisor. The district court did not find that he was organizer or leader over this conspiracy, rather than that he did play a manager or supervisor role, and that was based on numerous facts found.
What's the strongest evidence that he was a manager or supervisor?
I would say there isn't one piece, one fact that I would ask the court to look to. I would ask the court to look to the combination of all the facts, the combination of the conspiracy in its totality, from the fact that Mr. Cardenas initially packaged this marijuana in Texas in the shrink wrap and grease and then placed it into the crates, The fact that Mr. Cardenas then assisted in overseeing the delivery across the states from Texas to Indiana, this over $1 million worth of marijuana, it wasn't a small amount where just couriers were driving it across the country. These sophisticated conspirators had a what's called a trail car where Mr. Cardenas, the supervisor or manager, drove in or was a passenger in and followed the truck with the marijuana. He then followed it, made sure that it arrived safely. He then determined that Mr. Gutierrez, who had some medical infirmities, couldn't unload as quickly as what he wanted. So he directed Mr. Garcia to allow him to go and get with the other individuals and help unload. He told Mr. Garcia, or at least Mr. Garcia then decided to wait for Mr. Cardenas to come back. When he got to the residence, Mr. Cardenas is the individual who started unloading the van. He was the first person hands-on the marijuana. The marijuana was then placed in an assembly line fashion. And Mr. Cardenas was also the individual that Mr. Garcia testified had given the cell phone to Mr. Martinez, the other drug courier, and that Mr. Cardenas accompanied this trip following along in the trail car because he, in fact, had ownership interest in the over $1 million worth of marijuana. If the court has no further questions, Your Honors, I'd be happy to answer anything, or I'd be happy to sit down.
I think you can sit down.
Thank you.
Ms. Moffitt? How much time? 2.5 minutes.
I'd like to reiterate the point earlier that there's no evidence that there's any loose marijuana in the van. And addressing the government's point that there is this footpath established from the garage to the living room, and they cite in their brief on page 21 that it was due to this lack of space in the garage. And clearly with, you know, the bales, and there's no lack of space in the garage already. There's no reason for them to suddenly begin switching and moving marijuana into the living room, nor do they have time to do so. The assembly line terminates in the garage. When the police enter and they're, you know, everyone's in the garage, of course they're going to, you know, go towards the house or outside of the garage or somewhere else. I don't think that having that kind of footpath establishes that they must have been taking the marijuana off of the van and putting it in there, especially when there's no evidence of loose marijuana, there's no evidence of the dimensions of the crate, that these bales could actually have fit inside that crate, or evidence of anything else. The government doesn't even say how much a bale of marijuana is, much less what the exact dimensions of the crate are. Can all this marijuana fit into that single crate? They don't answer any of these questions. They don't provide any evidence on this point.
They did put rough estimates on samples of marijuana as to weight, though, didn't they?
The numbers that appeared in the pictures were provided by the co-conspirators and not by the government. The government has evidence of the number of bales, that there were 70 in the living room area, 14 in the garage, and 119 in the van, but not as to weight of those individual numbers. Rather, the only weight that they provide is the weight total of all of the bales of marijuana.
And was there any, apart from the testimony which is disputed about the witness saying that there was marijuana in the living room, is there any evidence that was presented that it was by the defense that there was marijuana in the living room before the delivery?
There was no evidence presented that, you know, the marijuana could have come off the van or couldn't have. I mean, Gutierrez says he sees, you know, marijuana, and it's before he gives any sort of testimony or understands, you know, that the van is being unlocked or being opened or that's being used. But, I mean, the main thing is just that it's physically impossible for that marijuana to have come off the van. And there might not have been anything provided at the time, but there's certainly no evidence supporting the weight.
I suppose the question is, could the jury make that determination and say, well, it might be improbable, but it's certainly possible?
No, I don't think it's possible to conclude at all. I don't think a rational trier of fact could conclude that have come off the van.
So, in other words, what you're saying is that we ought to say that as a matter of law, this jury erred in finding guilt for the full amount, because, of course, that's what we would have to do.
But my time has expired. May I answer your question?
See, your time hasn't expired.
Regardless of how much you wish it.
Yes, I believe that as a matter of law, no rational trier of fact could have found this because it was physically impossible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rowe. Ms. Bertrand. You have 2 minutes, Ms. Bush.
The concept I'd like to focus on for the last 2 minutes goes more to Cardenas than to the weight. If the court were to somehow, I don't think legally it can, bifurcate the conclusion about the weight not being proven from the jury's verdict of guilt, but if it were to, it would apply to this as well. And that is, with Cardenas, the government can make these assertions, and it's understandable, and they can point to parts of the record where witnesses say, yes, it was Jorge Cardenas, as opposed to, I think, two other Jorges in play in the course of this conspiracy. The issue is this was judge fact-making by a lower burden of proof, and this is the discomfort that Justice Ginsburg just emphasized again in Cunningham when it comes to increasing sentences within similar guidelines, regimes, there, the California determinant sentencing law. This is what makes the Supreme Court so nervous. These judge-found facts, lower burdens of proof at sentencing. And I think because this evidence wasn't adequately tested, it's infirm as to the leader-organizer enhancement for Mr. Cardenas. But I will know the answer shortly, I guess, from the Supreme Court. Does the court have any other questions of me?
I don't think so. Thank you, Ms. Bertrand.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And our thanks to the Chicago University of Chicago Legal Clinic for their fine work this morning. And thanks also to the Assistant U.S. Attorney from Southern Indiana.